Okay, so let me start by thanking the organizers for a wonderful conference. I'm going to talk about some work that David Tong from MIT and I are in the process of finishing up. And it's has relations to some interesting ideas that I think you all are familiar with, such as those listed here. So as you know, scalar field dynamics is very important, particularly in cosmology, where it's important in inflation and possibly quintessence. In string theory, we add a bunch of scalar fields in the form of moduli that we have to deal with, and their dynamics is very important. And tunneling effects require understanding the moduli dynamics as well. And typically, it is studied using the two derivative action for the relevant scalar fields, labeled here by phi, with a kinetic term and a potential term. And in much of the string theoretic and string inspired analyses of quantum field theory, people have focused on calculating things like the moduli metric and potential in highly supersymmetric cases where these things can be determined exactly. For example, in the n=4 super Yang-Mills theory, the moduli space metric given on the flat directions coming from diagonal adjoint scalar matrices, big phi, decomposed into a diagonal that minimizes the effective potential. The metric on that moduli space that we calculate classically in that system is in fact exact. So the two derivative action in terms of those variables is this simple, boring, flat metric given here, and that's exact non-perturbatively quantum mechanically. So in that case, if the two derivative actions suffice to describe the dynamics of these scalar fields, then the motion on the moduli space would be very simple. Let's focus, as I will in most of this talk, on the case of one eigenvalue moving off. So let's call it phi 1, and I'll restrict to calling it phi shortly. That is, the matrix takes this simple form, breaking, say, the original UN gauge group down to U1 times UN minus 1. Then we have this flat metric, so the equations of motion just lead to a constant value of phi dot. This is written wrong, phi dot is constant. And so one moves, for example, to the origin of the moduli space in finite time, according to that approximation. However, that is a very bad approximation. The dynamics of this scalar field theory is simply not well described by the two derivative action. The reason is that as we take phi to zero, new degrees of freedom emerge. They become light whose masses are proportional to the value of the VeV phi. I'll collectively refer to these modes, which in the n=4 theory includes scalars, gauge fields, and fermions, as W bosons. These are off-diagonal matrix elements in the adjoint spectrum of the theory. As we move toward the origin of the moduli space, these modes produce two basic effects, which are distinct. One is radiative corrections to the action for our original scalar field phi, coming from, that is, virtual effects of W bosons. And the second effect they can have is to be produced on shell in the dynamics. I'll talk about these two in turn. The first one comes in the perturbative regime from diagrams like the one I've drawn there, which lead to corrections to the effective action. I've written the kinetic term phi dot squared, and we get from, say, this diagram a correction scaling like a power of phi dot squared over phi to the fourth times a power of the Tuft coupling lambda g angle squared n. So from virtual W bosons, we have corrections that scale like these higher derivative terms, and you see clearly that as we go to the origin, phi goes to zero, these terms cannot be ignored. So just to belabor this point for 1 second, note that these are higher derivative terms, but they're not suppressed by powers of the string scale or any other high mass scale like the Planck scale. They're only suppressed by powers of phi. So our basic results will be that we can sum these effects up using ADS-CFT and the strong coupling, strong TIF coupling limit of the CFT. And these effects sum up to produce a dramatic slowing down effect relative to the naive two derivative action expectations in the field theory variables. And this point was made first, I think, by Cabot and Lipschitz. Then combining this effect with gravity and other ingredients will lead to a slow roll inflationary phase, with a slow roll coming from this effect and the acceleration coming from the potential energy that's generically generated when you couple such a CFT to gravity and other sectors. So the net result is that the interesting idea of K-inflation, that it has been explored in somewhat general terms before, occurs and can, really can't be avoided as you move toward the origin of the moduli space of, for example, the N=4 super Yang-Mills theory. Okay, so that will be the main result, which may already be starting to be intuitive, but let me go slowly and talk now about the second effect that I mentioned of these light modes. That is production of on-shell W bosons. So because this is a time-dependent background, as we move phi toward the origin dynamically, the mass for the W bosons depends on time. And in this kind of circumstance, we expect particle production. Now, you can show using very simple estimates that the strength of particle production in such a time-dependent mass or time-dependent harmonic oscillator is controlled by m dot over m squared, or in this case, phi dot over phi squared. So if we start moving toward the origin at large phi governed by our, I keep saying phi equals v naught, but phi dot equals v naught. The virtual W boson corrections first become important, as I said, when this quantity, lambda phi dot squared over phi to the fourth is one, which translates in terms of the velocity v naught to phi squared, reaching square root of lambda v naught, whereas W production becomes important from the estimate I just gave at a value of phi squared of order v naught. So at weak coupling from this, we see that, in fact, the process of W boson on-shell production is encountered first as we approach the origin. These results suggest that at strong coupling, instead, the virtual effects become important first. And this argument is not sufficient to show that, but we will see that that is, in fact, the case. So now I want to focus on the strong coupling version of this theory. And for that, we can study it. The effective description is that given by the gravity side of ADS-CFT in the large radius regime where the ADS radius scale in string units is the TIF coupling lambda to the fourth power. In the gravity side description of ADS-CFT, the scalar field motion, the Coulomb branch of the theory, is described by a three-brain domain wall in the ADS-5 times S5 background sitting at a point in the S5, jumping the flux across the wall by a small amount relative to the original flux N. And the scalar field, the phi is related to the coordinate R that I wrote over there in that metric for ADS, linearly in this way up to a factor of the string tension alpha prime. And we'll look also at a simple generalization in which instead of a three-brain, we consider an anti-three-brain in the same geometry. This case of the anti-brain is, in some sense, a strong coupling limit of the brain-anti-brain tachyon matter system that Sen and others have discussed a lot recently. We get a kind of strong coupling version of that by, instead of taking one brain and one anti-brain, we take n brains and one anti-brain. Given this geometry, it's now immediately clear that the process of going to the origin of the Coulomb branch can't occur smoothly in finite Poincaré time t. So in this probe approximation, as we'll see, that will break down at some finite place, but in this probe approximation, it's clear that it takes forever to reach the origin, and the speed limit coming from staying below the speed of light in proper units on the gravity side is imposed clearly from the geometry here in a way that we would not have known a priori from the field theory description. And again, this is something that was first noted by Cabot and Lifshitz. All right, so it's already clear then that the two derivative moduli space approximation is wildly wrong. As we move toward the origin, I'm really distressed that I kept putting phi instead of phi dot on these transparencies. But anyway, phi dot is constant if we just trusted the two derivative action, whereas the real story is that phi has to move toward the origin with a velocity that's slower than this bound. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So a priori there could have been phi double dot terms and so on. And that's one of many self-consistency checks that will need to be done on our evolution. So our strategy will be to study the effective action that depends on just the velocity, phi the evolution from that, and check that the accelerations are small. Okay. So the plan then is to analyze how it happens that phi slows down. What is the detailed evolution, not just this simple speed of light bound, in what will turn out to be a nice controlled approximation scheme. We'll do that first in the global field theory, and then couple it to gravity and other sectors that we expect, for example, in a full string compactification, although we'll treat it mostly in effective field theory. And we'll, having done that, we'll study cosmological evolution following from this behavior of phi of t, including potential energies that are generically generated, as I'm sure Sandeep explained yesterday. And the basic idea then is that since phi slows down according to the these velocity corrections that we'll discuss in more detail, this seems to provide a new mechanism for, it certainly provides a new mechanism for acceleration and may even translate into a full model of inflation. So the basic lesson is that K inflation occurs in strongly coupled field theory of this sort. Okay, so let's go a little slowly and understand the setup a bit better. So in this gravity side description of the strongly coupled field theory, we have the following basic elements of the spectrum. We have this brain, which can have strings ending on it. There are low energy modes on it plus string oscillator modes. And just as in the Randall-Sundrum setup, the effective string scale is warped down by the geometry. So at a position phi, it turns out to scale like this in terms of lambda and phi. We also have strings that start on this brain and stretch all the way to the horizon of the Poincaré patch of ADS. These are the strong coupling limit of those W bosons. And working on the gravity side, we can compute their mass, including the warping. And we find, of course, that it's still this BPS result phi. For the D3 bar brain, I said this was a strong coupling limit of Sen's brain anti-brain system, where he and others studied the tachyon dynamics. That tachyonic mode was, again, a string stretching from the anti-brain to the brains. And in this context of this large number of brains, that mode is actually turned around, is no longer a tachyon. You can see that basically by putting together these two results. The negative zero point energy is at most of order the effective string tension at the position of the brain, which is dwarfed by the positive mass squared coming from the stretching energy of the string. So this is a regime of parameters for that system in which there actually isn't a tachyon. There is an instability. The anti-brain wants to go toward the throat, toward the horizon, toward the origin. But that's really a motion mode in this geometric sense rather than a tachyon. There are also massless modes on the brain, which we'll talk about more, and of course the bulk Kaluza-Klein spectrum. So the effective action for this system is given by the Born-Infeld Lagrangian, and again, ultimately we'll couple that to gravity, and we want to be very careful about the possible corrections that can exist in the system. So I've written down the full action here, and I'll explain kind of where all the parts come from in different cases. But basically, there's a Born-Infeld term coming from the area of the brain embedded into the background. There are curvature couplings that come out of that action if you treat it carefully. And again, when we couple to gravity and other sectors, we generate potential energy contributions. Let's start slowly and do the pure field theory case. There, the effective Lagrangian for the probe brain is just a DBI action embedded in ADS space, which if we restrict to spatially homogeneous motion of phi to get the background evolution is given by this action here, which is related in a simple way, again, to the square root of 1 minus the proper velocity squared in the background. So this action includes couplings of the open string to the closed string background, that is planar loops of open strings, but not closed or open string production or back reaction of the probe on the geometry or acceleration. So we'll check all these things again in a self-consistency check after we find the evolution. So let's first find the evolution coming from this action and see if it's all consistent. So in the pure CFT, we take that action I wrote down, this Born-Infeld action, and vary it, find the Hamiltonian. It's easy to study just by enforcing conservation of energy density E, which comes in this form. Again, if you expand the square root, you find the usual kinetic term plus corrections. But we will ultimately be working in a regime where that's not a good expansion, as the square root length contraction factor is going to zero. So from this, we can solve for the evolution, solve for phi dot as a function of the energy density E. And let's consider the regime where phi is approaching the origin. This expression simplifies for phi smaller than this value, leading to approximately speed of light evolution for the probe as it goes toward phi equals zero. At these late time small phi regime, phi goes like square root of lambda over t. So we have solutions where we approach the speed of light on the gravity side. If you back up from that a little bit, you see that you can see how you accelerate toward that. And again, from the naive moduli space approximation to the CFT and the field theory variables, this is a dramatic slowing down of its motion on the moduli space. Okay, so now let's start doing these consistency checks. The proper acceleration is much smaller than the string scale in these solutions. I haven't done all the algebra out for you, but it's true. There is a limitation from back reaction of the probe on the geometry. As it moves faster and faster and approaches the speed of light, it carries a lot of energy. And one way to think about it is it jumps the curvature across it in a way that's proportional to that energy density in proper units times the five-dimensional Newton constant. And that gives a bound on the window of control we have over this evolution that says that phi has to be bigger than g string squared times the energy density. This bound is consistent with the window I derived earlier of approximately speed of light evolution. So in this window, we see this phase where phi approaches the speed of light on the gravity side, and on the field theory side is slowing down dramatically from the naive expectation. Okay, so for cosmology, which is one of the most interesting applications we can make of this result, we want, of course, a couple to four-dimensional gravity and other sectors that generically should be present. So in string theory, we imagine this as coming from a throat emanating out of a Calabi-Yau. I'll treat it mostly in effective field theory, where we can think about starting from the CFT effective action, adding gravity, including the curvature couplings that arise actually from the Born-Infeld action, including generic couplings to other sectors, like I've indicated here schematically, there could be some modes in a different sector labeled by eta with couplings suppressed by some power of a high mass scale M star. So let's see what this whole combination, how it behaves gravitationally as well as in terms of the scalar field evolution. So first of all, the higher dimension operators coupling the CFT to these other sectors generically correct the potential, introducing a hard mass for phi, while at the same time only introducing subleading corrections to the DBI kinetic terms. This comes about by simply estimating these effects in the way that I've indicated here, and basically arises because the mass term is soft and wasn't there in the original theory, whereas the kinetic terms that we started with are marginal and began at a much higher strength than we get from these corrections. So in a little more detail, for example, let's look at how such a coupling would change the phi dot to the fourth term. We could get such a correction from that coupling to between the two sectors in, say, this diagram, and clearly, by dimensional analysis, you can see how it works. There are extra powers of this high mass scale M star in the denominator. So these effects are smaller than.
Tell me again what eta is and what M star is.
So I'm doing this in effective field theory. So eta is just a mode in some other sector of the system that I'm coupling to my system by this coupling, for example. It's just an illustrative example.
M star is white mass?
It could be, or it could be some gut mass or something else. Basically, the corrections to the mass term are leading order as far as the mass term goes, but the corrections to the DBI action are suppressed. For small enough phi, the extra powers of M star in the denominator lose to those of phi in the original higher derivative terms that we've been using. So basically, we get corrections to the potential, such as M squared phi squared, while maintaining, to a good approximation, the original geometry, the original series of kinetic terms that mattered for the slowing down effect of phi in its motion toward the origin. A kind of simpler way to say that is, if in effective field theory we had deformed the system by hand to introduce a mass, we can ask, what does that do to the kinetic terms? Those came from integrating out W's, W bosons, which used to have mass phi squared. Up to logarithms, this contribution at most shifts the mass of the W to this scale. And then it's clear that we get the same results as before by integrating out the W bosons as long as phi is bigger than M. And that's all we'll need for our applications. So just to restate this, the effective action for the system takes this form, Born-Enfeld coupled to gravity with curvature corrections, a potential that will come from the sorts of effects I just mentioned. And again, there is important fine print about when this is valid, which we will need to establish via self-consistency checks. Okay, so let's see what happens. Before I get into more of the details, I will just list some of the results. This quote-unquote slow roll of phi as we approach the origin survives the gravitational coupling. It was really a field theoretic effect that continues to happen in this more general setting. And since the field can roll very slowly in the presence of a non-zero potential, gravity feels that potential, and for appropriate, quite reasonable values of the parameters, one obtains acceleration from that in a regime where the potential doesn't have to satisfy the usual slow roll conditions, which were derived from the two derivative form of the action for the scalar field. So I think this is an interesting way to at least ameliorate some of the challenges raised in the recent KKLMMT paper, which I think you heard about yesterday. So this is kind of the thing we're most excited about, but there's also other effects that are interesting here. String cosmology requires us to understand the patterns of motion of moduli cosmologically, and we see here that if you get into if you get close to the origin or close to singularities that behave like this, then you get stuck and you don't move on, at least not very fast. So that should probably be taken into account in string cosmology. And there is a phase where we turn off those quadratic terms in the potential, which gives us a dust-like evolution, which is reminiscent of tachyon matter. And finally, as I keep saying, there are important self-consistency checks that I'll come to at the end. In particular, production of on-shell W bosons and strings is suppressed in the system. Okay, so let me just go through the details. It's a really fun system to play with. So let's take, for simplicity, a flat spatial metric, FRW. And now we want to solve for both the evolution of phi of t and a, the scale factor a of t, in the system. So we can vary the full action that I wrote down and derive the stress energy tensor, the energy density and pressure, which take this form. Again, you could expand them for small velocities and get the usual results, but we'll be interested in a regime where those expansions are bad. And I should say that the self-consistency checks will do involve starting ignoring the curvature corrections and then showing later that they didn't matter. So then the set of equations of motion we have are the usual Friedman equation and the scalar field equation of motion. And what I want to note about it is that this length contraction factor of gamma inverse square root of 1 minus proper velocity squared, which is going to 0 in our interesting phase approaching the origin, multiplies the terms in the scalar field equation of motion involving the potential and the friction. So this is morally why we'll find, just by solving the equations, that the slowing down effect driven by the other terms is not much affected by the potential and gravity and so on. And this is also why it'll turn out that the conformal coupling doesn't affect us as much as usual. Okay, so we use the Hamilton-Jacobi method to solve the equations. I think most people here are very familiar with this. It's a useful thing to do in our setup because we're interested in small phi, so we expand phi in a power series about zero, about the origin, and massaging the equations of motion in the usual way allows us to start by solving for the Hubble in terms of phi, and then go back and solve for phi in terms of that result for Hubble, and then go back and solve for the evolution of the scale factor. So we'll just do it parameterizing our ignorance of the precise values of these potential terms that are generated, and just do it as a function of those parameters. So let's start by tuning the cosmological constant to nearly zero, using our favorite mechanism for doing that. And then consider non-zero V2 and V4. Let's start by just assuming V2 dominates and see what we get. So let's expand H for small phi in a power series, as I've indicated. Solving these equations, this is probably too much detail for the talk, but give a result for H1. The resulting evolution of phi is driven again toward this regime where it approaches the speed of light evolution. Going back and solving for the scale factor gives us a power law expansion of A of t with the power given by this quantity H1, the coefficient of phi in the Hubble in H, times a very helpful factor of the square root of lambda. Remember, we're interested in the strong coupling regime where lambda is tuned to be somewhat large and can parametrically be taken large for this purpose. Okay, so one case is to consider also zero quadratic term in which case H1 simplifies and one obtains a dust-like evolution for the scale factor. But if V2 is not zero, then you know, we can take it to be large enough that H1 root lambda is big enough and we get acceleration, power-like acceleration from this expression. In particular, this result gets better as we take the quadratic term in the potential larger. A flat potential would be worse for us because, as you see, the acceleration gets better as this exponent increases. Also, the other important difference from the usual rules is that this phase is happening for small phi, in particular, much smaller than the Planck scale. So we do not need or want super Planckian VEVs to use this mechanism for slow roll in inflation. Now, one might want to apply this acceleration both to inflation and to something like quintessence, but there was that back reaction constraint I mentioned in the global case, which still applies. So this phase is finite, and we certainly don't have a controlled eternal acceleration here, but in a minute I'll show that we do have a simple way of getting enough E-foldings for, say, inflation, and that's just, well, it's clear from that result for the scale factor, the number of E-foldings scales like this parameter H1 root lambda, and that requires translating back into a statement about the potential. We just need it to be bigger than this quantity, and again, if we tune the Tift coupling lambda to be big enough, this is completely reasonable regime of parameters. There's another case we can study, which is fun, in which there's, let's consider these three terms in the potential, but say that the mass term is subdominant for some reason. Then with a negative quartic term of this magnitude and a positive sixth order term of this magnitude, one finds evolution where phi decreases again like a power 1 over t at late times, and where the scale factor has this somewhat bizarre behavior in which there's a period of acceleration for small enough time, and then it turns over, as you can see, at very late times it approaches a steady state evolution. Okay, so let's be careful though about all these issues of control. So now I want to report on those self-consistency checks that we still need to do for this case. So we have curvature couplings like this conformal coupling R phi squared, which normally causes problems. Here we find it doesn't. We have to look at what it does both to the gravity equations and the scalar equations of motion. For gravity, because we have very small sub-Planckian phi, the effect on the gravitational sector is very minimal. Normally it makes a large contribution to the Planck scale, but here in our regime it doesn't. The scalar equation of motion, I think I said this before, has these extra powers of the length contraction factor square root of 1 minus v squared in front of the terms involving the derivative of the potential and also the conformal coupling contribution to the scalar equation of motion. So this is a nice way around that problem, because as emphasized by KK, and other, you know, many inflationary papers, the R phi squared term is normally a problem. Okay, there are also, if you look carefully at the Born-Enfeld action in a curved brain embedding, there are corrections also scale, you know, a whole series of corrections correcting every term in principle that scale like powers of curvature, four-dimensional curvature over phi squared. So let's check that in our interesting phases, these don't matter. That requires an upper bound actually on this quadratic term V2, which just says it's smaller than Planck scale up to a factor of the string coupling. So I've just here plugged in our result for H squared over phi squared that gives us R over phi squared in the inflationary setting. So this is another constraint, but it's, again, a very reasonable regime of parameters. Now, in the non-inflationary phases, like the dust phase and so on, it's trivial to satisfy this because h is so much smaller. Finally, we want to understand the perturbations of this system. As I mentioned before, acceleration is small, so those phi, double dot, et cetera terms don't contribute much. In particular, they would have contributed closed string radiation off the brain, but that seems to be suppressed. Let's now ask about the particle production. Now that we have the background evolution, we can calculate this measure of particle production, m dot over m squared, which for the W bosons, again, is phi dot over phi squared. And plugging in our result, phi going like root lambda over t, gives us control over this, again, at strong coupling. String states on the brain have a similar suppression. Being created at high momentum, they're in fact extremely suppressed. And now let me come to the final topic, which is perturbations of phi. And this is the thing which in normal inflation works out so beautifully. Here we haven't finished analyzing it carefully, but we just wanted to check that it's not a large source of back reaction, at least during our inflationary phase. So the equation of motion we get for the perturbation delta phi of our field phi in this background where we approach phi equals zero in this way we've been discussing looks like this. So it's an interesting equation. It's quite different from the usual perturbation equations. For example, the gradient term has some extra suppressions and powers of t. At the same time, there's a mass squared term coming as Hubble over t that normally wouldn't be there. That last piece for cases like sub-Planckian k roughly, where the mass squared term dominates, one finds that the evolution, so let's first check particle production given that time-dependent mass, and we find that suppressed in the same regime that we found inflation. And if we look at the solution of those equations of motion for the perturbations, when that effective mass squared term dominates, one finds that they, of course, die rather fast at late time, so the perturbations are less dramatic than in normal inflation. This may be bad for phenomenological applications. We still have yet to sort that out in a careful way. And in fact, that's the first open question I wanted to list, which is that of trying to formulate a complete model of inflation based on this mechanism. So first of all, it'd be nice to really predict the value of the quadratic term and the potential in some explicit string compactification. Again, there are estimates in recent papers, and one can certainly do the effective field theory type of estimates I made, but it'd be nice to do something even more explicit. The exit from inflation needs to be studied, and the spectrum of density perturbations, either coming from this sector or maybe coming from another sector in the way people have realized could happen recently, needs to be understood. Another interesting open question that this emphasizes is, again, the question of generally how moduli move around in string cosmology. As we approach one of these singular points, at least the ones that behave in the same way that we found here, the field gets stuck there. So what does that mean for early universe cosmology and string theory? Part of that is to understand how general this phenomenon is. As I was saying, at weak coupling, particle production dominates, and we haven't worked out, or I'm not sure we know how yet, to work out exactly what that does to the dynamics. But there are also other cases with strong coupling. Any conformal field theory with a large radius ADS dual will behave essentially the same as what I explained here. But we could ask about cases whose gravity description is more like a conifold, and really understand physically what happens cosmologically as we approach the conifold singularity in string theory. And it raises some very interesting technical questions about in which of these cases can we really sum up these important higher derivative corrections. We could use this trick of large radius gravity side ADS CFT to do it in the cases that to which that applies. But there may be some much more general way of understanding it directly, and that's a very interesting question. Another kind of conceptual question that is fun to think about in this regard is that we have the scalar field in field theory, which a priori has no reason to be constrained in its speed of motion on its configuration space. In quantum mechanics, there's nothing that says a generic configuration variable has to be limited in some way, like we found here. But here we found that it does happen in the quantum theory at strong coupling for these field theories. And it's something we really only learned from using the technique of ADS CFT. So it's very interesting to ask, when is this going to happen? When is there a geometric interpretation effectively of such variables? And I don't know the answer, but I think it's a very interesting question. So let me stop there.
Okay, thank you very much for a fascinating talk. And let's start the questions with Sandip.
So Eva, you might have said this and I missed it, but if you throw the anti-brain down instead of the brain, there is automatically a potential for it.
Right, there's a quartic potential that scales in the variables I was using, like phi to the fourth over lambda. Very small and should get corrections itself.
I see. So that won't suffice to give you the required.
That alone would give you this dust-like evolution.
Okay, you said. I see. Thank you.
So you had fairly negative conclusions concerning the fluctuations, but I think what you considered is only fluctuations in the scalar matter field sector, not fluctuations coupled to gravity. And I would suspect that if you include the fluctuations consistently, you'd get much more positive conclusions.
Well, I shouldn't have come to any conclusion yet because we're still doing it carefully. I really enjoyed the earlier talk by Mukhanov today about that, and we are still catching up. So I don't know if the conclusions are positive and negative, and absolutely we need to do the tensor modes too.
Now, if you think about the system from the gravity side, you have some brain moving in some background, and it's very important for you that the brain is moving near to the speed of light. So under these conditions, I would think that the kinetic energy of the brain will dominate over its tension. And so I don't see how you can get acceleration.
It doesn't. In fact, the condition, one can work out that the condition we found for inflation.
I think your assumption of a quadratic potential might not be as innocent as you think. Because
that's a different question. Let's go to the first question first. Okay, if you have a quadratic potential parameterized by this V2, then this condition to obtain acceleration is exactly the same if you go back to the equations for rho, that the potential dominates in rho. So it dominates as the source for gravity. That is exactly the same condition. That's right. In an exact conformal field theory, you could only get phi to the fourth because of conformal invariance is one way to say it. And that's why for the anti-brain, the Born-Idvel term is phi to the fourth over lambda. But when you couple it to other sectors, there's nothing preventing you from generating a hard mass term. And, yeah. Well, I would say that you can check that the contributions to the kinetic terms, which describe the geometry as seen by the probe, the corrections coming from these other sectors to that are subleading to the original Born-Idvel contributions, but the corrections to the mass are dominant. So as far as the probe is concerned, it sees the same kinetic terms that it used to see and that caused this effect.
Maybe we should move on to some other questions and continue this over tea.
So, of course, in the examples like the flux compactifications, there will be a coupling of these moduli to the other moduli, like the Kähler modulus for the overall size, for example. Have you thought about whether these features would be persistent when you really include those couplings?
Yes, I mean, those couplings, those are the types of couplings that end up generating this sort of correction to the potential.
Okay, that's so, what you had in mind, for example.
Well, I think that's one of the kinds of things that can occur. I do want to address Juan's question because it's extremely important. So let me just go back to this. I just want to find this simple fact that the corrections to the kinetic terms are small compared to the corrections to the mass. So here's an example of a situation where you generate a mass with the same effects that generate a mass, generate a subleading correction to the kinetic terms that we started with. Or again, more simply, if you add a mass by hand, which you can do in effective field theory, you can ask, what does that do to the kinetic terms we obtain by integrating out the W bosons? And it gives a small effect for large enough phi, and this phi being bigger than some mass scale little m still allows it to be small enough for the other window that we need. I mean, this is maybe not obvious to you, but it's something we checked that this mass did not have to be, for example, Planck scale. It was off from needing to be that by some powers of lambda.
Any further questions?
Are there also small phi enhanced terms which couple R to d phi square or things like that?
In general, there should be all sorts of things like that.
And can they affect your analysis at all?
They're small for the same reasons.
They're small?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They will also have some 1 over phi to the fourth on dimensional.
Yeah, you can see that actually. So phi dot is less than phi squared over lambda. Square root of lambda. This is the speed limit. So if you had a phi dot to the n, you know, r to the m over mass powers, this is less dangerous than phi squared.
No, but I meant to rescale those by 1 over phi to a power. I think that's what you will get because this is an infrared effect.
So I went over that. You have things like this.
Yeah.
But those were small in the background.
Yeah. There's no further questions. Let's thank Eva again.